This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Here we are, live, ready to, I don't know, regale you with tales of conquest and success, or failure and embarrassment. Who knows? I mean, it could be anything, right? I mean, it could be both of those and some. It's Wednesday, which means it's Gourd Day. What's wrong, Sia? You having trouble with your headphones?
What is going on?
You're struggling over there? What's happening?
It's so temperamental. Do you know when you're dealing with a chord to a point where you have to hold it to a certain at an angle for
Seriously,
it to work.
That's the worst.
Oh my god.
So I don't know if I'm screaming.
That's when you know that things have failed voice. When you've got to hold the cord to a certain angle.
Well, isn't that what Eskom are doing at the moment? They're kind of jigging the thing and then twisting it a little and going, oh, sorry, we don't have enough power here for that.
I can't do this.
What's wrong? Is it not working at all?
No, it is working if you hold it up at an angle.
Try this side. Your cord's long enough to reach me, Sia. We know this.
Gourd, 2019, can we just start a new, clean, family-friendly slate?
Yes, when that happens, maybe we'll consider it. Till then, you need to come and plug into my port, big boy.
Have you ever wanted to be like an, what are they called? Like an 888 hotline girl?
Yeah, no.
You know, Leanne did that for a while.
I would just find it too weird what some of the people...
People would call her and she'd go, oh, yeah, you're making me so hot. No, sorry, she didn't do the call line thing. She did the voiceover for those ads. Do you remember the ads that used to be on?
Call 1-800.
That's it.
Yes, wet titties.
Yeah, call exactly. 100. So wet and tight.
What were those actual things called? They eventually banned them. They were like 0870 numbers or something like that.
Hey, listen.
I just remember
350. You could also gamble via that.
We'd just come out of apartheid and life was hard for us as South Africans. We didn't. Men in this country didn't have a lot of places they could go. They didn't have porn, really.
I remember when they just removed the stars off the titties.
It was a big deal, huh?
Jeez, it was a big deal. Well, I mean, it was a medium-sized deal. I was an adolescent, but it was a deal nonetheless.
We used to imagine what was under those stars. Mm.
Yeah, then they took the stars away. There was this golden era where porn wasn't like so horrific that you had to check yourself and deal with your feelings after you'd watched it. It was like just okay. It was just women being naked. Cue thousands of feminists. Women being naked for men's pleasure in fucking corner stores.
You know what's funny is that's exactly how feminists sound.
Yeah, because I'm saying like, there was a time when it was like pretty rudimentary stuff, but you could get it. Like, you could get it off from special stores, or you could get it from like the corner store. I remember they used to sell it at like the shop, that the garage shop, and you could go buy one, and they were wrapped in a little bit of cellophane.
That's right.
And
you could go and buy
it, and then you didn't feel like obviously you didn't want it on the coffee table, but you didn't feel like if you had this stuff lying around your house and someone were to find it, like you'd die of shame. It was like, keep it out of reach of kiddies, and you're good.
Yeah. People always used to say, oh, there were really great articles in there.
Dude.
Yeah, I remember. I remember when Hugh Hefner's Playboy was where people would find really, really thoughtful, interesting pieces written by brilliant journalists in between, like, a bunch of pictures of naked girls. And, like, it wasn't a big deal. And now, of course, the whole world is completely different. And now if you even... you cannot imagine. There's no way you could countenance the presence of a naked woman in a sensible, serious publication. They'd be doing mental gymnastics.
But the
gymnastics.
Journalism has died as well. Not just the quote unquote acceptable nudity or sub nudity. That's like no longer got a place in mainstream society. So that's fine. I mean, I can live without it as long as the rest of it doesn't get banned. But the journalism has nowhere to go either, because with the free access to like infinite information on the internet, the pay gate systems have caused there to be no reasonable income available for good, hardworking journalists who could spend a year researching a story.
I agree with you.
And then publish it.
That amount of depth is just not available anymore.
So cool. You can have 100 pieces of shit information for free, or two great ones that cost you money, and people will go for the 100 pieces of shit in a second.
Yeah, you think about now, print publications, as much as they're all in this dire state, they're only just a handful globally who still do these long-form articles that you really want to sink your teeth into and yeah. read. I think like the first that pops to mind is like Vanity Fair. Other than that, mm-hmm. there's Empire, nothing
still
else.
Empire still do
really.
Some pretty good stuff.
I haven't checked on Empire
in about 2 years, but they were still doing some pretty good
you
stuff.
You mentioned that you once you were a subscriber to a number of publications. I don't even subscribe to the two that I used to, and this is so geeky and boring. The one anyway, Architectural Digest, which mm-hmm. I used to love. And the other one was always Vanity Fair, but I buy that at the airport and I'll read it on a flight and take it home. I've got a collection of them at home because I just believe that magazine, if you can even call it a magazine, is just so painstakingly put together.
Yeah, and the art direction especially.
Oh, spectacular.
I've never been big into reading it, but I remember looking at the art direction.
Even the advertising in there is curated. It's beautifully put together. Like, yeah. you're not going to see a shitty ad that belongs
well, there's
in
there's no place for good ads now either, because especially in the print format, like, that's always what kept GQ going, was that they realized that, like, they had a small subscriber base between 10 and 20,000 people, which in magazines is not a lot. Yeah. Nowadays, it's actually a lot. Yeah. But at FHM in our heyday, we sold close to 200,000 copies, which is like, for South Africa, it's completely unheard of.
It's extraordinary,
of.
Yeah.
It was between us and Cosmo for like breaking records every month.
Wow.
And, they said, we said at one point, we wouldn't be viable to do the magazine if we ever dropped below 60. And we did so. And then when I left, it was floating between 50 and 60. And when they closed it, it was sitting between 10 and 15. And it's just like, and then you've got low quality paper, smaller magazines, mm-hmm. smaller sections, that kind of thing. So GQ, for example, they knew their subscriber base was going to be low, but there needs to be somewhere to advertise Patek Philippe watches, or somewhere to advertise like the new Aston Martin. There's no point putting that ad in like a U magazine that's got millions and squillions of readers, because literally one in every million of their readers is going to be able to buy an actual Rolls Royce or the latest Rolex.
Or two in their squillions.
Yeah, so
in your words.
people would pay a lot for that advertising space, but it would reach the right market, even though that market was small.
But do you think that is what will hold these titles up, whether it's a TV show, whether it's a print publication, whether it's now print publication moving digitally? Do you think you mentioned like that curated content? Do you think that is what will hold it up?
If you look at what's happened in all media, whether it's television, which is also falling off horribly at the moment, they can't get the money that they used to. You look at the SABC, and I know they're not the best example, but they are the giant gorilla in the room and always have been in South Africa. And now they can't even pay their staff. Three board members resigned this week. Did you hear about that?
Mm-hmm.
Because the minister's been interfering, just like, that terrible Faith Mutambi. She really was one of the worst ministers we've ever had. She interfered, and we all know what happened to the SABC under her watch. Three members of the board have resigned because they don't like this ministerial interference, and they've been trying to steady the ship and get it back on track. And really, they've done the best they could with a bad situation. But the SABC, even if they can get everything right, even if they can fix it all, they are facing unprecedented competition, not just from other TV channels, and there's a new license going out or something, not that anyone cares, but there might be, might bleed 10% of their audience, already shrinking audience to that. But there's the internet, and people go there to find their news. I don't know how you get your news, but magazines are very, very complicated, because it's a niche within a niche within a niche. The only magazines that are surviving and doing reasonably well or be at least able to break even at the moment are the ones that are so specific, like a Farmers Weekly.
Well, you get more specific than that. You get like Aviation Insurance Monthly.
Correct. Mm. And those are fine, because they're usually bankrolled by three or four really big sponsors.
Yeah.
And that covers their costs. And any additional advertising is like, that's profit.
Then there's the stuff that's free, but you pay to put advertising in, well, like your local
an Edgar's Club Mag, well, like or one of those
Four Ways Tribune.
Oh right,
like,
okay.
Who's Jack Russell? Must be quiet and then yes. People advertise stuff in Four Ways. The Sandton Chronicle's another one like that.
Mm-hmm.
To the best of my knowledge, I stand to be corrected because it's been a while since I've cared at all about print media. But to the best of my knowledge, those are free.
Mm.
They basically have to cover the circulation and printing costs. And then the rest of what's in it is paid advertising. So they don't charge people to have
right.
it.
But interestingly, a couple of months ago, I watched two short documentaries that spoke to this. One about 60 Minutes, which is one of journalism standards in TV programming in the States.
Just quickly, they say that was the point at which news became entertainment.
Mm.
And now you have like polarized media outlets like Fox and CNN where they realized that if you said an opinion that people agreed with, they would watch that. More of it than if you just told them what had actually happened and hoped that the charisma and good looks of Ron Burgundy was enough to carry it through.
Interesting. Well, 60 Minutes, which now we have carte blanche, which is a bit of an offshoot there, but watching their behind the scenes on how they put the show together. So the show has various contributors, and contributors work with different production teams. But one of the executive producer of the show is so meticulous in everything that is done on that mm-hmm. show. He will sit in with a contributor even as that person does a voiceover of a story they're covering.
To make sure that there's a right tone.
And he says, take out that word, rephrase it there. And I think those are the tiny little nuances that make a big deal.
We had this woman in here the other day, and I actually watched the episode that she directed. Do you remember the woman who directed Dynasties, the chimp mm-hmm. episode? This is a BBC Earth.
Okay.
It took them 4 years to record, and the whole episode is maybe 40 minutes. Maybe. It's about this one chimpanzee and his family and his tribe and his life. And I mean, it's just the most incredibly beautifully filmed show.
It was Rosie Thomas.
4 years, Rosie Thomas. You can listen to the podcast. 4 years it took her to record this. Now, that amount of care and attention to produce something is very rare.
Yeah.
Because people are churning out clickbait content every other day, right?
Totally.
And that doesn't take a lot of effort. That's not hard work.
No.
You get bullshit. And it's fairly cheap.
And it's all bullshit. And you can tell by the headline that it's bullshit. And people don't read the bullshit before they share it.
And you could get some varsity intern to type up a clickbait headline. And you'll get 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 hits if it's well-crafted enough. And you don't really have to be a genius to do this. And then there's no actual stuff in the article.
There was a fascinating Joe Rogan with these two guys who are doing their, I think, master's or doctorate or something on how like bullshit the super feminist media is, where they started creating their own, totally making up, and they gave each other points for how completely left of field and just like for lack of a better word, bullshit it was, like about how something about the burger that made LA famous as a payoff line for a famous burger place on Venice Beach was like part of toxic masculinity culture because burgers are masculine food, therefore LA can't be famous.
You're joking.
No, and they got this stuff published, Jesus. Like in all these publications, these so-called social scientific publications, and then released their like thesis on how they literally, as if through the idea manatees at South Park, they're like literally as if by dice created these like social problems about masculinity
in
and
a hamburger.
Got them and then got them, well, there were many.
Yeah.
They were like surfboards or a phallic.
Well, you can make it all up. I mean, this is the most amazing thing. Dory, who works here in the office, is always scouring the internet for this kind of thing because she runs our online stuff and our social media and all the rest. She sent me an article about a 7-year-old kid who's made $22 million on YouTube in the last year. Now, this kid just reviews toys. He basically unboxes.
I know about those kids.
Now,
yeah.
This drives me crazy because I've spent my life reading and trying to learn, and for my own good, obviously, but also because I like to share this information in interesting conversations with people who are a lot smarter than me, so I can learn things too. You've got to kind of meet them halfway, though. You can't come in as a complete ignoramus and say, teach me. People are going to go, no, that's too much work. meet me halfway, know something about the subject. This kid, 7 years old, kindergartner, unboxes toys for his with his parents for millions. I do not understand this, but listen to these numbers. This just shows you how dumb the world has become. He has 934,621,669 views on a video in which he plays with toy cars. Right? It is so dumb that even
and
if children
I kind of understand it.
Even if children are watching it. I mean, you've been carefully budgeting. Just think about this now. You're an adult human being somewhere in the world listening to us. You're thinking about your health. You're thinking about your wallet. You're thinking about your kids' education. You're thinking about your
Nando's.
Relationships. You're thinking about whatever. You're thinking about stuff that is important. And this kid is managing to garner an audience of hundreds of millions. You know what it does? It just takes the bottom out of it. And we talk about quality, which is where we started this conversation. Mm-hmm. Forget it. If you want to be Rosie Thomas making a four-year-long documentary that gets condensed down into 40 minutes on chimps that'll actually help people understand our own anthropological ancestry, forget it. But there's a kid who's unwrapping a toy that's going to get 2 billion times your audience.
A multi-millionaire.
He's the same, though, as those ads that they used to do for kids for toys based on cartoons. Like, they created He-Man to sell toys. But there was a rule back then that... Do you remember, like, all those American ads with the kids with the floppy 70s hair? And they'd be, like, together. And it would be, do you want to be... You can be, like, the powers of Duckman. Oh, no, but it's his arch nemesis, Bird Boy.
So yeah,
they'd have, like, five kids sitting together playing. And then only the end was kind of an animated sequence to do with whatever the toys are about. Because it was like a rule. Your ad was only allowed to be like 10% or 15%.
And the rest
animated.
Had to be actually
live action.
Yeah.
Well, no, it had to be live action. So you had to show, you couldn't just make an animated ad. And so then the loophole was that
they
created.
First I've heard of that. Okay.
Yeah, it's a true story. Well, they got these cool documentaries. There's one called The Power of Grayskull on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Very interesting about the story of He-Man. Just the art and everything and how it came to be. Very, very interesting. And then there's another series called The Toys That Made Us. Which is just about the like history of all of it, Barbie to He-Man to G.I. Joe, Ninja Turtles, the whole story. But they got around it by creating a TV show for the toys, and that was kind of the big innovation. But this is the same. This is like kids want to see another kid playing with the toy and see what the toy is like. It almost takes the place of a form of very successful advertising.
I'm sorry, I still think it's absolutely mad.
But there was the train made by the Beetle.
Yes, Thomas the Tank Engine.
There was a kid who, you know, you build those tracks. It's almost like Scalextrics. You build your tracks.
My nephew's
there
doing
was a kid
it.
That watched that made those same videos. Also, millions of subscribers.
All right, I get it. I mean, I do understand it because this is the real world. But I'm sorry if you are a serious investigative journalism. Let's say like you've uncovered state capture, and you know you're Jacques Poe, and you've written a serious book. I mean, he's not getting $22 million for his expose of what is potentially the most dangerous thing that's happened to South Africa post-apartheid.
No, sure.
It just boggles my mind.
I completely agree with you, but I think you are to an extent comparing apples with oranges.
All right.
Because it's like this kid is not being posed as a journalist of toys.
No, sure.
It's more of an advertising platform.
I know, but it drives me crazy. It really does.
Now, there's a lot of places in the world where hard work versus remuneration is completely fucked unfair.
Well, this is
nurses, good teachers.
Yeah. I mean, listen to these. These are the names of the top people on YouTube, right?
Why is a great teacher, like a really good one, not driving a Porsche?
I know, they should be, right? There's something about that.
Nurses
so
as well.
So this guy, Logan Paul, who was the one who filmed a video in Japan that showed an apparent suicide, someone hanging from a tree. He then apologized, and his income from videos and brand deals took a hit, but loyal fans kept his merchandise business afloat. He's earning $14.5 million a year from YouTube. PewDiePie, who I've heard of.
I've also heard of. What does PewDiePie do?
He's a Swedish
video
gamer.
Oh, he said the N-word.
Gord, it would be nice if you listened to the answer.
Sorry.
He starts talking before I've
I'm just trying to figure out who
I know, no.
Are.
I'm trying to tell you.
Sorry.
Jesus.
But he did say the N-word.
Yeah, he did. a rash of anti-Semitic videos, apparently. Advertisers have come back, shelling up to $450,000 a pop for sponsored videos by PewDiePie. Mm. So he's at $15.5 million. Mm. Jacksepticeye. Seriously. He is an Irish dude, also does video game commentary. He's at $16 million. Vanos Gaming, again gaming. Markiplier. Now, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know who. I was sitting with Casper Lee in London. You were there.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a YouTube star, right? Something like 8 million listeners, viewers, whatever you want to call them. I didn't know any of these people. He had famous people at the table with us that I've never heard of in my life. Jeffree Star. Do you know who that is?
Does it say, though? Because I keep wanting to ask, and then I'm scared you'll shout at me again. Does it actually? Because who was the last guy?
Okay, makeup artist, famous since the MySpace era, has invented himself as a beauty mogul. Oh. Jeffree Star Cosmetics is his business. Sells an estimated $100 million plus eyeshadow, lipstick, and highlighters annually. Well, I say his, but it could be a her. So I've got to be careful there.
Don't assume zer gender.
Markiplier says he's on PS4 all day, but he's not bumming around. The gamer toured North America, signed 7-figure deals worth of brands, and this is amazing, launched Cloak, which is a high-end athleisure line, I suppose, that for gamers.
But that's something.
Athleisure.
Sure, yeah, I mean,
look good. Don't, like, because, you know, neckbeards that play these video games all the time, they look bloody terrible. So he's, it's like, let Oaks look cool while they're video game. Why
right,
not?
So he's developed a line of
athleisure. That's the best thing I've ever heard. I hope he makes it in 4XL. I'm going to get me some, what's gamers. It called? Cloak.
Cloak.
If anyone can help me track down some Cloak, you can catch me on Instagram and on Twitter, and I will buy that shit if it's in fat size.
Then there's Dan TDM.
He's like now what must be up to third or so now.
He's number four.
Okay.
He has massed a following of 20.7 million people who shell out for his tour and merchandise, which includes backpacks, baseball caps, and hoodies.
Mm.
Dan TDM. He specializes in Minecraft. I mean, this is amazing. So
he's a gamer, but gamer. He's got like his own line of merch. Like Michael Jordan, Nike gear.
Correct.
Dan TDM has got Dan TDM
backpacks.
Hats.
And, yeah. Dude Perfect is at number three. Five-man sports crew. Specializing in feats of dexterity and intricate trick shots, like hurling ping pong balls that trigger domino falls of Oreos.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, listen, don't get me wrong. This is expanding. And when people say to me, oh, you know, the economy relies on mining and on logging and on breaking open rocks to get out crystals of some old mineral that was made during a volcano 16 million years ago, I say to them, look, the real economy is that people are willing to pay for Dude Perfect to knock over some dominoes.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
So there. I get it. Jake Paul's brother, Logan. Logan Paul's brother, Jake Paul's at number two.
Oh, so Logan's not even the Paul at the internet.
He's not even the best Paul. I swear these guys, like Casper must have introduced me to these guys because they look familiar. And then Ryan's Toy Review. That's the kid I was just telling
you
about.
That's number one.
Number one. $22 million.
That's 302 million rands.
Just think about that.
Per year, presumably. Yes. Yeah. I want to be the fat guy that unboxes burgers.
Do it, please. I promise you, you'll end up with millions of viewers. You will.
Because I'll be funny and I'll also eat the burgers.
And you'll be passionate about it. You've got to do something you love. Yeah. That's what Jake's Toy Review tells me.
Yeah.
It's like if you're a 7-year-old, but you're really passionate about something, it can become a business.
But I mean, also, like, I remember during KTV and that, like, sometimes the ads for the toys in between the shows were like, they got you going. Like, you really wanted those Ring Raiders. Yeah. You were too young to understand the entendres, and you wanted Ring Raiders more badly than anything in the world.
Ring Raiders.
Yeah, because the ads were so cool. Like, you want to see this shit. You don't know about it. I mean, kids can't exactly sit and research the internet to see everything Mattel and Prima and whatever. This kid will obviously get now offered all the best stuff.
Right.
Choose the best. Probably charge, almost certainly charge, the companies that he selects.
Yeah, because it's product placement.
Yeah, like they'll say to him, hey, you'll like this, 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 and this, and he'll charge them to play with the one thing. And
well, it's likely his parents will.
Sure. But I mean, it's a great way for kids to see what's out there and either get super excited and nag their parents or choose what's for Christmas.
For example, I mean, this is in some small way analogous to that. And Carl says here, I get most of my news, talking about the journalism stuff, from you guys at Cliff Central. Is that dangerous? Is my worldview myopic because I rely so heavily on you for my news? I would say yes is my immediate...
Yeah, it could be.
Is my immediate kind of knee-jerk. But you know what, Carl? That these kids who are watching those toy reviews have a similar problem when it comes to assessing the world of toys if they only follow that Jake. You know?
Yes, and Jake's preference cannot become the world's preference.
But people are allowed to choose. I would always prefer to have a range of sources, and I try to bring a range of sources here because obviously it's going to be colored slightly by my own.
Yeah, well, that's part of what you sell. I mean, part of what you sell, if I may be so bold, is informed opinion based on current events. So if you've got like a good spread of knowing what the... I don't need to swear here. Knowing what the hell's going on. Okay. And then a person with an informed opinion.
He just self-regulated.
Yeah, because I swear too much on the show. I realize this. It's not always necessary.
You know, it's so funny you bring that up because I was listening to I sometimes listen to the show just to hear if it's still entertaining. From a listener point of view.
Because you don't have an opinion on that on being here.
No, because while you're in it, I'm living in that moment. I'm not really thinking. I'm not analyzing it. I'm not trying to win the audience over. I'm just talking. But I listened to it the other day and I thought, oh my God, it's horrible when I swear so much. So I've realized some days I do and some days I don't.
Well, I like it if it actually adds. Sometimes it's a great way of like just adding a bit of passion to what you're saying. It just becomes habit. So I'm trying to swear less. I'm not like now trying never to swear.
You were trying to make a point just a moment ago before I interrupted.
Yes. So what you're actually after in terms of getting news from Gareth is like somebody who's up to date with all the major headlines and then has their own opinion about those headlines. Mm-hmm. Whereas those headlines, assuming they're not just bullshit to begin with, you might have a different person who's also a smart enough individual with very different views on them, giving you a completely different perspective. So I think if you're picking one news outlet to get your news from, I think the Gareth Cliff Show, I mean, I'll just say this because I'm here and I'm on it. That might have something to do with why I'm here and I'm on it. I think it's a great source if you've got to pick just one. But you should try find maybe one or two others that aren't. I think the Daily Maverick do a reasonably good roundup of the day's news, and then I go to YouTube. I watch John Oliver.
He's funny.
Yeah, I watch Colbert.
Well, there are a couple of messages here. Let's just go through these. First of all, someone here called Anki says, "Made my day, Nigerian pussy song. People in the office are going to hate me. Have a great day." That's right, because we played that at the start of the show. And then this is interesting. This is from Ben, who's talking about our Ben. He says, Ben's 100 Days to Better is really useful. I've used some of his ideas and I don't regret it, especially the daily written to-do list. It just gnaws at you all day until you get your shit done. A written one forces you to shamefully write an item again if you missed it on the previous day, whereas a digital one, you could just delete the others and leave it there like a brand new list. That's beautiful. Thanks, Ben. Yeah, you know what? Ben's... he's been on this mission. He did it. I think he's completed his 100 days to better. But basically, over a period of 100 days, he kept on doing things that improved his life. And I could see he was much happier by the end of it than when he started. People need to have things to do, and you need to have some kind of authority and control and sense of accountability in your own life to make it happen.
Yeah. I was watching... now, how am I drawing a blank on this? I watched so much of his stuff. He wrote the 12 Steps to Being a Better Person.
Jordan Peterson.
I watched him on Joe Rogan the other day, and he was saying the same thing. It's like, you know, doing things that put responsibility on you to make yourself or your community better makes your life. So in other words, added stress makes you happier if it's the right kind of added stress.
Correct.
Put responsibilities on yourself and then be sort of pressured by them.
People think that the ultimate is to be retired and lazy and wake up in the morning with no important things to do, but that will kill you very, very quickly, and that will also give you zero meaning.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, I think I could handle it, but...
No, I don't know. I thought my kid would finally make Indian friends and learn about other cultures, but she's only friends with white foreign kids, says Venetia. I hope you're well. I'm currently living in Bangalore in India. I moved here a month ago. Must say the cost of living is pretty low. I can definitely believe that list that you gave us yesterday. Yeah, I gave you a couple of lists of different countries and how they rank in the world. Plus, there are so many foreigners here, says Venetia. But I thought my kid would make Indian friends. but all she is doing is being friends with white foreign kids.
But it's been a month.
Give her a chance, Venetia. She'll, you know, it's amazing. Like, my nephews have got this very diverse friendship group, which obviously when I was at nursery school, I didn't have because we were still living in the dark days of terrible apartheid. You know, I mean, my brother's best friend while we were growing up was our domestic workers kid, but that doesn't really count, does it? I mean, I suppose that was just because they were around each other.
Probably, yeah. Probably to his benefit now.
Yeah, but they were both, I mean, they were inseparable.
Oh, cool.
They would spend all day together. They would share toys. They would watch TV together. They would fall asleep on the sofa together. They were really, really good friends. But apart from that, like, it's just so interesting for me to watch. Not because they're picking diverse friends, but because they're just choosing friends.
Yeah.
And they have there's the smorgasbord of different...
It's like the premise of South Park, why I like the kids don't get along so well. Is because, like, when you're that age, when you're, like, what, 9 or 10, your friends aren't like those people, like, when you're an adult who have stood by you through thick and thin and who you have that amazing chemistry with and who you've been with friends with since varsity and they're best man at your wedding, and that your friends are the kids in your class.
Right.
And you're stuck with whoever there is.
Correct.
And if you're the one that's like, they need to make up the numbers to get a group of eight, but they don't really like you and you're the eighth, then you know it. You know, that's one of the main premises of South Park. Like, you kind of hate your friends a bit when you're a little kid because, like, you're stuck with them and they're dicks.
All right, listen, I've got to get to the five things. See how we get carried away? All right, before we get to the five things, though, we've done a couple of these episodes already. Today at 8 a.m., we bring you another episode in our series for the Love of Law. We take you behind the desks of some of South Africa's smartest lawyers. It has to be said, this is being listened to by people who are not even in the law. Interested in what these lawyers have to say, what their backgrounds are, what kind of people they are. Lawyers can be fairly intimidating, right? You don't just go around meeting lawyers unless you're in trouble. I mean, a lot of my friends are lawyers because I studied law. But I find these people fascinating. So this guy today, you're going to love, Ira Epstein. Doesn't that sound like a lawyer name, though?
Yes.
If you give me any more trouble, I'll get my lawyer. Ira Epstein. Oh, Jesus.
Not Ira Epstein. Yes.
Right, am I right? He wanted to be a hotelier, of all things, but he went on to graduate with a BCom, then an LLB, cum laude, in 1981, with extensive experience in commercial and corporate mergers and acquisitions. Now, that's some powerful lawyer stuff. Ira is your best bet to make sure your interests are protected in all your business transactions. Now, despite not having a hotel of his own, he's been a director at Fluxman's for, a whole 10 years, confidently navigates the world of commerce from a legal point of view. You can find out more by listening to him at cliffcentral.com. For the Love of Law, brought to you by Fluxman's Attorneys, one of South Africa's leading law firms. It has to be said, now that I've spent a bit of time there and we've met some of these lawyers, it seems like a pretty cool place to be if you're in the law. Nice sort of atmosphere, nice collegiality. There's a nice word.
Collegiality.
Yes, feeling of collegiality.
Is that from collegiate?
Correct. That's right. Colleague. It comes from the same stem. But there we are. Ira Epstein, you can hear him today.
Isn't collegiate like the dress sense?
Yeah, it is as well, because college, you know, those preppy boys and girls who have sweaters around their necks.
Oh, that's how I know.
It's American. That's American kind of Ivy League college.
Hey, and if this matters to you, their offices are very Instagrammable, to each his own.
Sure, beautiful offices. Yes. My God, they're in Rosebank. Whew. All right, let's talk about some stuff. There is a lot of news to get through this morning. First things first, the new NPA boss has been announced. Some people are very excited about this. I don't know yet because I don't know anything about her, but she seems like she has the qualifications. Shamila Batoy says South Africa's crisis of corruption and state capture is not insurmountable. The advocate made the remarks after accepting the nomination for the position from President Cyril Ramaphosa yesterday. Did you watch it live?
No,
nobody did.
No.
But she is important. She will formally take office in February after serving her notice period at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. That's a pretty hardcore place to be practicing law. And what's nice about the International Criminal Court, even though South Africa's government has said we don't want to be a part of that anymore, is that that lets us find a way to get the Guptas. Because International Criminal court.
They need international courts for everything. They should have the international divorce court.
when one of your what your ex is like a resident in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, just like let's upscale everything, you know. They can have criminals that got everyone else.
So I don't know enough yet, but we'll try to get an interview with her. I don't know if they're the kind of people who like to do interviews, these public prosecutors. But good luck to her. All I can say is she's got a full desk of stuff to get through. She has so much to do because Shaun the Sheep has not successfully prosecuted anyone during his time as NPA boss. Not one person. Just think about that. That means the whole country on the books has no criminality.
No, we are a beautiful, shining, golden people.
So that's madness. So good luck, Shamila Batoy. I hope you are as tough as you need to be to get through this. It's going to be a very hard job.
Literally walking around with a wooden stake and just going straight up to people and impaling them in the chest on the spot.
I mean, that's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah.
Two suspects in Cape Town, aged 54 and 56, have been arrested for operating an alleged hydroponic dacha lab.
Oh, bless them.
How intense.
Yeah.
How can that be so illegal in this day and age?
The Hawks said on Tuesday that the pair were arrested at their small holding farm in Mukpunt in Klipjeuvel in Cape Town. They were arrested.
You find oaks who are growing hydro in Mukpunt.
I don't know. And also, what kind of priority is this? Honest to God. They were arrested during the takedown operation that had uncovered 158 dacha plants with an estimated value of 15,800 rand. A whole 15,800 rand?
Possibly each.
And 19 jars of harvested dacha to the value of 50,000 rand.
These guys just wanted to get blazed. Isn't getting blazed allowed now?
Well, I just do not understand how that's a priority crime.
Also, how do you get caught? I used to grow so much weed and it was like, everybody knew it, and it was like no one cared. I mean,
indoor or outdoor?
Outdoor, but a bit of indoor as well.
Okay.
Yeah, we did both.
Were you saying like each plant could be valued at 15,000 rand?
Yes, yes. If it's chronic and it's grown properly, which if it's grown hydro, it almost certainly will be. That's like having an in-house garage with all the trimmings like a Jay Leno would have and filling it with like VW City Golfs and that. Like if you've got a hydro setup, yeah, I mean, easily. These guys, if they're wholesaling it, will easily be wholesaling it for 30 to 50 rand a gram, getting a few hundred grams off every plant.
So what?
And if they're retailing it, they'd be getting 80 or 100 rand a gram.
So 100 rand a gram, let's say.
Sorry, there's a 0% chance that value is for the whole crop. Like
you don't think the entire crop is worth 15,000
rand? Not even ever.
Rand.
I, in 2003, sold an entire plant for 4 grand. And like that was unheard of. Today that's unheard of. With inflation, that's 15% what it should cost.
Well, listen, I think this is a possible growth area for the economy. Now we've legalized the private recreational use of dacha. I do not understand why it shouldn't be something which is commercially viable for people who want to grow small crops of this stuff and sell it.
Especially with hemp, the benefits of hemp, because I mean, I know it's not exactly the same plant, but there are hemp benefits. And in the States, guys like Dan Bilzerian and this other cat that I know calls himself the Wolf of Weed Street, they like make huge amounts
of
money.
Of Weed
no, really, they make massive amounts of money being like investment guys.
So can you imagine?
The guys in Cypress Hill are making millions and millions having set up farms that that quite literally like grow extremely potent hydro and sell it legally in the states where it's legal.
I don't understand how, forget about the people who are going to make millions out of this, just ordinary, you know, subsistence farmers, guys who are in the Eastern Cape and have like 1 or 2 acres of land, and you can grow quite a lot on an acre of land.
And it's good climate for weed as well.
Right. I mean, I don't see why we should be preventing these people from doing that, especially now that the courts have decided this, and the police and the Hawks investigating this is just insulting to their intelligence, let alone anyone else. In Rustenburg, hey, you know what, I've got these guys from Land Rover Rustenburg popping by later on. They apparently they will fetch your car, take it to Rustenburg, service it, and bring it back. They're going to come and do that for me this morning. So talk about Rustenburg. We'll get into that later on. But these activists who are walking from Marikana in Rustenburg, in the northwest, to the union buildings to hand over a list of demands to President Cyril Ramaphosa arrived on Tuesday night. Spokesperson for the group, Napoleon Webster, said they would sleep at the Attridgeville police station on Tuesday night and continue their walk to the union buildings on Wednesday morning. They're going to hand over their demands. Apparently, they are demanding the finalization of the compensation to widows of the Marikana massacre.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm all for that specific cause, but I've never understood why this, like, walking a far shitty distance thing makes your handing over of your demands that much more impactful. It's like, we're going to listen to 19 straight hours of Josh Groban, and then we're going to hand over our demands.
Yeah. Exactly. Your suffering in this case is not particularly noble. And I would say that it's sort of like those people who run the comrades and then can't stop telling you how they did the comrades, but they didn't win it, so who cares?
Well, I even get that a little bit more, because their purpose was not, now you must listen to their pyramid scheme pitch more because they ran the comrades. Like, you're gonna listen to us because we're gonna do something shitty on the way to give you our letter.
Oh, remind me to tell you what I did last night, because I drove past the union buildings night. I went to a very interesting little event, but I'll tell you about that now.
Nice.
KZN's MEC for Safety wants radical action over escalating crime. Well, sounds like you're talking. Doesn't sound like you're doing anything. According to KwaZulu-Natal's member for the Executive Council, that's the MEC, for Transport, Community Safety and Liaisons, Mkholisi Kaunda, made the remarks during his keynote address at the province's 2018 Crime Summit. And you love these crime summits and these discussions and these talk shops.
I always, in my mind, when I hear about them, imagine a summit where all the criminals come and sit down and they're like, hello, everyone.
All right, let's
welcome
address.
To the 2018-2019 Crime Summit. We're really upset to have the vampire slayer Cobra Gang not in the house today.
And here
they've reclused themselves based on heisting.
And here's Danny Kaye and Cabello to sing a song for us.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to ever comment on Danny Kaye's father-in-law phones me with threats.
All right, so here is another story, and then we're pretty much wrapping up the news. Zimbabwe's new diamond policy allows more than 49% foreign ownership. This is very interesting because, remember, under Mugabe, everything was about beneficiation within the country, that Zimbabweans would own Zimbabwean exports and they would reap the benefits of selling that into the international market. Well, guess what? Here we are a couple of years later, and they've had to turn that completely around because it hasn't worked. Zimbabwe will allow foreign diamond owners and miners to own more than 49% on the condition that rough stones produced from the country are submitted to a beneficiation center operated by the Zimbabwe Consolidated Diamond Company. They have vast deposits of diamonds. Although global miner Rio Tinto has exited the country, it's left locally owned Rio Zim, as well as the state-controlled ZMDC, as the major diamond producers in the country. And Cabinet, in order to start opening up the industry and making it viable, are allowing two other unnamed companies to venture into diamond mining. So it's amazing how government always does this. They regulate, then they realize they've regulated too much, then they have to pull back on that, and then the money starts flowing again. More regulation usually means less business. That's just how it works.
Sorry, you used regulate three times there, and I just thought of orange.
Yeah.
I was trying to just take it all in.
It was a cold, cold night.
In Zimbabwe, the diamonds were going really cheaply.
Snoop is in that song.
No, just Nate Dogg and Orangey. Yeah.
Oh, it's Nate Dogg, that's right. Okay, a couple of messages before we move on to the cryptocurrencies. No Ben today. Ben is busy with some project with the Mzansi Super League, but we've got a question for Gord, among other things here. Sean says, I don't know for the life of me why shrooms are illegal. It's absurd.
Oh my God, is this the same Sean, the prawn that keeps, I mean, I say this with love, but he keeps constantly inboxing me, asking me to do shrooms with him. Oh, and I'm probably getting more and more tempted, but I've got this feeling like he might be a narc or something undercover trying to entrap me because I mentioned this shit on the show. Like, but Sean is just like, dude, I want to do shrooms with you most badly, and other people from the show, if you can convince them. I promise you, like... Sean, your tenacity is unbelievable. But yes, I agree. You know, I agree it should be legal, but I think there's economies of scale is not the right word, but there's less reason for weed to be illegal than shrooms, because shrooms are mind altering. If you do accidentally take too much, it can fuck your head up. For me, they're pretty harmless done in the right environment with the right people. And even if you do have a scary experience, which is rare, right, it'll be over within 6 hours and you'll be back to your normal self. But like, there's a case to be made. Shrooms for me are actually, from a health perspective, especially if you do them semi-regularly in low doses, they say it can reverse dementia. They talk about it being one of the most powerful cures for depression. So there's argument on both sides for shrooms being even better for you than weed and being even worse for you than weed. It's a harder case to win getting shrooms to be legalized, but weed, especially if people are going to prison for dealing weed, growing weed, yeah, it makes no sense at all. But yeah, everybody 21 and older should be allowed to take shrooms whenever the fuck they want to.
So Sean's tenacity is incredible but suspicious.
No, he just like really wants to. I mean, dude, this is the actual conversations.
There's like pictures and everything.
Yeah, Sean's not scared. Sean's ready.
Well, Sean, if that's you, stop harassing Gord.
You can harass me a bit.
This one comes from... there's no name on this. All right, I want to talk to you guys about something that I really think we should address as society and what should be deemed socially acceptable. Airport arrival terminals. I went to Cape Town Airport yesterday to fetch my mom, says the message, and I waited at domestic arrivals for them to come through the gates. The scenes that preceded boggled my mind. As soon as some of the people arrive to see their loved ones, I shit you not, they sprint towards their people to the extent of bumping other passengers almost back into the plane. What's even worse is that people greet each other and have an hour-long conversation with each other in the middle of the arrival. Exactly, in the middle of the arrivals terminal, blocking all the other people who just want to pass. Can we all agree to make a soft rule? When arriving through domestic arrival gates, just walk and greet your loved ones and hug and chat outside. Or at least move for everyone to have space.
A taser level rule.
And you're going to spend the trip from there in the car with each other.
I feel your beautiful hatred. My absolute best... Okay, now this is in no way a comment on the Hajj. It's more of a comment on lots of people being there for the same reason. Let's say bloody... Kaiser Chiefs had arrived back from a massive win and in another country and lots of people
that
were there.
That would never
happen,
but okay.
No, what I'm saying, okay. it happened to be like Hajj arrive back
right,
day.
Right, I got you.
And like the families were all waiting for the returning Hajjis with great anticipation, and the moment that a single person that was recognized by their family of like five or six people would be seen even before reaching the now you can touch me zone, mm-hmm, they would like... You couldn't get through. And no, it was no, like there's six, listen, not just one
is,
family,
you know
there are
is.
Six families. And you have to like say, move, 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 or you can't get through at all.
Yeah, look, there are some people, and this is bigger than just the airport arrival situation.
Bottom of escalators.
I'm so happy you sent this because this is something that drives me crazy. It's people who just have no spatial or self-awareness.
Oh, man.
They are completely living in their own world. They have no idea that they have to share this world with other people. They're
Amen,
the same people
brother.
Who drive slowly in the fast
Amen,
lane.
Amen, Brother Cliff.
They are the same people who stand in the middle of a grocery aisle in a shop and block it and just look at the shelves
oh.
as
oh
if
my
no
God.
One else
and
is in the shop.
And people who look in a different direction than they're walking in a public area. When you're in a shop, a shopping center, you're like, ooh, look what's, like look what's 80 degrees to my left. In
you know
that
what
shop
this is?
Window and I'm
Can
just going to walk and stop at the bottom of a causeway.
It's
what
where
is it?
It's people who are they're raised badly by either absent or very derelict parents. And I mean this in the nicest way possible.
Yeah,
you
it's
don't,
Alan nice.
No, well, there's nothing I can say about it that's nice because it's true. You have never been taught how to behave in a group of people where you need to have manners. Nobody has manners.
Don't and you
just be considerate.
Don't
be
you
considerate.
Love...
Just be aware.
Yeah, be aware like, of other people.
You're not even aware that around you there are people who have things to do, who are probably as important as you are,
yeah,
who have real-time constraints.
I've got a real phobia, and this could be... You could crack a pretty good opportunity if you were Ben to drop a fat joke here, but there's not even. I've got an actual phobia, like almost like claustrophobia, of being in the way.
Yes, me too.
I don't mind a confined space, but like if I'm stuck in a place, like in a busy if there's an event or a nightclub experience,
get out of the way.
And I've got nowhere to stand where I'm not in the way. I get it at concerts as well. Like, please God, let me not be in the way. And I just try to get out of the way. I can't breathe if I feel like I'm in the way.
Last night I was at this cocktail reception at the French ambassador's house, right in Pretoria. Fancy. Very fancy. And they gave us this really beautiful French champagne. But when you're standing around, I like to not have my back to anyone for a start, because that's rude.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to stand in a place where you're not turned away from people. So I try to stand on the outside and then face inward, just because that's good manners.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone comes up to you, or you, if someone enters the room, you can acknowledge them. And this isn't just at cocktail parties at the French ambassador's house. This is everywhere. This is, people have no idea how to behave in social situations. They will turn their back to you. They will talk right past you to someone over your shoulder.
They will look
you in the eye and not say hello. People just have very low socialization. And I think this is as a result of being raised badly by parents who don't teach you how to interact with other human beings meaningfully. And let me tell you something. This is not a small thing. This is not etiquette. This is not about being
You're having your forks in smart. The right order.
No, no. This is about getting ahead in the world. If you don't have these manners, if you're not aware of the fact that you're standing in the way in an airport terminal, if you're not aware of the fact that
people
you're
squeezing
blocking
past
the
you.
Escalator.
On either side of you, people are squeezing you to get past you.
But you're just
you.
Blissfully unaware. If you are blocking up the road with your car, or you just put on your hazards and take up a lane, this is as a result, and this, I'm afraid this is a damning judgment on you, but you're never going to be taken seriously by the rest of society because they hate you.
And when you and your five mates are standing side by side walking abreast in a shopping center having a competition to see who can walk the slowest, and you don't notice people on either side of you squeezing to
get
past.
If you are thinking only of yourself, if you've got a screaming child on a plane that you don't seem to be bothered by, but everyone
else
clearly
is. Look,
I mean,
if you're desperately trying to quieten the kid down and it won't quieten down,
you understand my point.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people who are not even aware of this stuff, and it's crazy. You need to tidy up your life.
Yeah.
You need to be a little more well-mannered, a bit more socially aware. Otherwise, you are never going to get anywhere. People will hate you. I promise you, they might not say it, but they will stop letting you be part of what they do.
I don't mean to rain on your parade here, but I was at a mall yesterday, and all of this is in action and already multiplied because
especially
of the
this
festive
time of year.
Season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. People are just milling around at parking lots. I think our eighth world war will be caused by the line at a parking machine when you're paying for your ticket.
Oh.
And my other best is people who queue in a long queue say like it's a very busy Nando's, and you're in a queue to order, and the person in front of you gets to the front of the queue where they've also been for 5 to 10 minutes,
and then they start
looking at the menu to see what they might feel like today.
I know. It's like, what were you doing?
Like, what were you doing before?
It's these girls who will walk like the Spice Girls 5 deep, all in one line, and take up the entire
corridor.
That's
what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. People walking abreast. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a name for it, you know, like. Because ornithology is the study of birds. What is the name, because Gareth will know this, for people who bird watch?
Ornithologists.
But those are people who study birds. Like, it can be bird scientists.
Well.
What is like an ophile? You know, like, what is an ornithophile?
Aviophile.
Yeah, let's say that. Like, what do you call people who are fascinated as if it's wildlife watching when someone's driving really slowly and irritating the fuck, and then you go past them and you crane
and
your
you
neck
look,
to see,
you see
what
how
the
stupid
idiot
they
looks
are.
Like. Yeah. Like, you know, idiot watch. When you see someone, you walk past them in a shopping center and they're just completely in the wrong place doing something odd and stupid they could move 2 meters to the left and do. And as you finally, you and the queue of people squeezing to get past them, I turn my head and just make eye contact and say, like, I hope you know that this look means you're an asshole.
Yes.
But it's also fulfilling to look back and you see that the person does look as stupid as they
and they still
yes.
them,
what
they
doing.
Have no idea why all these people that I'm just like, they're like part of the video game. Non-playable characters, I call
them. So look what you've done with your message. You've got us all fired up now. Because I think this is something a lot of people are annoyed by because it affects all of us. Like when you're in a public space, when you're with other people and you are completely unaware of them and you only think of yourself, you're a problem for all of us. And I know it's little.
The irony is that those people don't know they are those people.
They don't. And I know that it's a little thing and it's not like World War III, but trust me, it sends everybody's craziness levels right up. It makes it impossible to navigate social situations, and you are being a dick. Stop it. All right. Very good. We got to move on. We've got lots to get to this morning. It's bright and early on a Wednesday.
It's already past 7.
I know. It's the 5th of December.
Can you even believe?
I know. Crazy, huh?
Oh, tune.
I know.
This is CliffCentral.com.